Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello, yes, it is I, Stephen Scott, back with you once again. Robin Christofferson also back with me here. Hi to you, Robin.
Hi, guys. Hello.
Right, let's get into them. We've got so much to talk about this week. There's so many rumours around WWDC, or as I like to call it, and my screen reader likes to call it, WWDC. Do you do that? Have you noticed this?
It does. On the Mac side, it does, but not on the Windows side with the same Ava lady.
Which is kind of weird, isn't it, actually, that it does that? But yeah, WWDC, I think there's so many rumours. We're going to get into some of them. And I'm going to talk about what my hope is for WWDC. Although, I have to be honest, I'm not seeing many rumours to back it up. So I'm kind of living in hope here. So we'll talk about that. Also, the new spring edition of Microsoft Windows 10 has launched. So I want to talk a bit about that because there's lots of new Narrator features. Do you use Narrator at all, Robin?
I do when I hear that it has something new and I check it out and then I...
Never use it again. I'm a bit guilty of that. Well, at least I used to be. I'm going to talk more about that later because the new Spring Edition, or 1903, to those of us in the know, that's what it's called, which basically is the month it came out, or not, as the case may be in this year. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to be going through your emails as well. Lots and lots of you asking questions, and that's exactly what it's all about. If you've got a query or a question you want to put to us here at the show, then please do, because if Robin or I don't know the answer, well, put it this way, if I don't know the answer, Robin will know the answer. If Robin doesn't know the answer, we're stuffed.
It's the other way around.
No, it's not. No, you're being too kind. I'm being truthful. Right, so that's all coming up on the show today. We've got so much to get through. Let's get into it. So I want to kick off with some news on the WWDC rumours. Robin, what are you hearing about what may be happening next week at WWDC, which of course runs from the 3rd of June up to the 7th of June. It's a big event, and essentially it's a software or, you know, developer event. That's what it is. WWDC is the Worldwide Developers Conference, where Apple people come together and they talk about all kinds of developments that are going on in the world of software. Not generally a hardware event, but what are you hearing about what's coming up?
We might see a bit of hardware in the shape of the long anticipated Mac Pro, the successor to the trash can Mac Pro, as it was called. So simply because it's a very developer platform. Developers for iOS and the Mac have to use Mac. You can't develop for iOS, for example, on any other platform. And the Mac Pro is the kind of truck for developers. So there's a lot of anticipation about that because it's been so long overdue, and it's this fabled modular approach, and there's lots of talk about whether that's going to be literally modular, like Lego brick building your massive computer, or whether it's going to be a big, you know, fancy tower like the old cheese grater Mac Pro was before, the cylindrical one that looks a bit like an Echo column. And
they've never really got that right, though, have they, with the Mac Pro? I mean, they got it right, I think, with the cheese grater Mac, as you call it. And actually,
absolutely,
that's exactly how most people probably remember it. I had one of those, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was, you had to reinforce your floor to have this, because it was an absolute ton of a machine. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a great machine. One of the things that was brilliant about it was you could upgrade it. You could open it up, you could put new hard drives in, you could change the graphics cards. These are the things that the developers, the guys who make movies, the guys who make TV shows, even those of us who just work in and dabble in this world, want. You want to be able to upgrade it, not buy a new one every 5 minutes, because they're not cheap. So,
and that's very much the pro approach. They want to be able to keep it current by putting in the latest and greatest GPU or processor or whatever, and that the trash can Mac definitely didn't do that. But their argument there was that it's so super cool that it'll give you lots of headroom and you won't need to expand it. But they were wrong. And it was, you know, there was a huge backlash against that. And so, yeah, that's why they've promised this very upgradable modular approach. So there's a lot of excitement there. So I'm pretty sure we will see that teased at WWDC. where, and it'll be coming out later this year. You know, that's what they'll say. I don't know. They might say exactly when, but we'll certainly see finally after they've promised that 2 years ago what that's going to look like. So, yeah, I think that'll be the only hardware.
It's not going to be the Air Power, Matt, is it? Which never, ever made... never made retail at all. In fact, they binned it. Yeah,
yeah. I wasn't excited about that ever, so that's fine.
Do you think they did? You think they just chucked the Air Power Mat inside the trash can Apple Mac Pro and just threw the whole lot out? okay, but as a software event, we are going to talk a lot about or hear a lot about iOS 13, the new operating system, which will all come out later in the year. As you say, the hardware will probably be the same, but we're going to hear about the software that's coming for iPhones and iPads, for Macs as well, even for TV, possibly even the HomePod.
Watch, yeah.
And the watch, yeah. So what is, I mean, it's always hard to know what's coming. Lots of rumours. Not many rumours I'm reading around accessibility, though. What about you?
No. I mean, loads of rumours around what we're going to see in the mainstream, you know, aspects of those OSs. But yeah, so to sort of sum up for iOS, for the larger screens, so the iPads, we're going to see loads of multi-window, not just the split view like we have at the moment, but literally windowing, where you can have as many windows as you like, and maybe even kind of different sizes spread around the screen like you can on a desktop. Dark mode, which isn't available in iOS yet, a true dark mode, so not just smart invert, which is obviously really good, but they wanted to do it, you know, officially. There is actually, having said about not any accessibility developments, I heard a rumor that they're actually moving the accessibility option under settings up to the main, you know, at the moment it's under general, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think they were saying that they're going to bring that up to the next level and, you know, make it much more high profile. So who knows? Maybe that will get a mention. We know how passionate they are about accessibility. So, yeah, that would be good.
I have heard that rumor. Yeah.
So Mac OS, I can't remember what particular things we've got coming there. New file management. Sort of super, you know, desktop level file management on iOS as well is another rumor. So I think it's going to be really exciting. Apparently, all of the things, all of the sexy things that were going to be in iOS 12 were pushed to 13 because they wanted to make sure that they were right. And 12 was very much a sort of a stability and performance item, wasn't it? Issue. So,
and I think that's the key point for this particular edition is going to kill off a lot of older devices, which, you know, kind of goes against what they stood for with the launch of iOS 12, which was to allow older devices to run. I've heard that the iPhone 6S, for example, wouldn't support this update.
That's right.
That seems, that's quite a popular phone, so that's going to render a lot of phones out of date.
Yeah, particularly with the battery replacement program, a lot of people's 6S's and 6's are going to be looking quite fresh because of that replacement. I mean, I'm personally holding out for a smaller screen. I've got an 8, which is still very new, or it, you know, new feeling to me. It's a couple of years old now, isn't it? But if there was a smaller screen option, and we were talking about the Pixel 3a, which is a very affordable, smaller version, not as small as the 5S or SE screen size, but on the Android side of things, it's a luxury top-end phone, but in a much more affordable body. But they haven't compromised on the camera or the internals necessarily, but it's in a carbon fiber body. It's not the super huge screen of the, what's it called, Pixel Max?
Pixel XL,
XL, that's it. So, you know, if they are going to do something around that, I would love to see a smaller screen. But it seems from all of the rumours to do with iOS in particular that it's all about the bigger screen and bringing extra functionality to the bigger screen. But yeah, I would love to see a smaller one so I could then give my wife the 8 so she could stay current with iOS 13. And I would get something that's even more portable and... You know, I would go for carbon fiber. That would be fine.
Well, this is...
Get a case then, because if you drop it, it will, you know, it won't break.
Well, you know, this is my one thing that I would love to see This is my thing I want. I don't know if we'll see it at the WWDC. There has been iPhone launches before at WWDC. In fact, the iPhone SE was launched there. We've had other iPhone launches, or at least mentions of it. I think it's probably the kind of event they would launch something like that, because Apple are not known for bringing out things on the cheap. But I think with declining iPhone sales, they need to do something. And now with the Google Pixel 3a coming in at £400, I think there's a real challenge here for Apple to say, right, we need to come up with something more affordable, something that is going to work. Now, I'll tell you something. I use my iPhone SE for work. It's my work phone that the RNIB gave me. And I compare it regularly with my iPhone XS. And I'm going to tell you something, Robin. I love my iPhone SE, and I love it more than I love my iPhone XS. Now, you'd think that's crazy, considering it's such a small phone. And I try to explain this to my sighted friends, who always say, but how can you see that? It's so small. And I'm like, I don't see it. I listen to it.
Exactly.
I don't need a big screen. And also, just the glass itself is not quite as slidey as the XS. I'm using technical terms here, obviously. but, you know, it's not as slidey, so it's a nicer experience. It feels more compact. I got a brilliant OtterBox case for it, which isn't a case, it's a cover. And it kind of gives me bumper edges. When you know those kind you get where it kind of leaves a kind of, how do I describe it? It kind of puts the phone in a position where the front is bare, but you've kind of got an edge
reinforced
around.
Corners and yeah,
just, you know, it just feels nicer to use. The problem I've got is it's only a 16 gig phone, and obviously in terms of operating system it's probably dead. It certainly will be once iOS 13's launched, but I would love to see an iPhone SE 2, and there are rumors that it may appear, maybe not at this event, maybe not at all, but it may appear, and if it does, it's going to come in the form of your iPhone 8.
Yeah, probably. Yep. Rounded corners and rounded edges and that sort of thing. But
so, if you wonder where all the old iPhone 6s are going in the Apple stores, they're going to be turned into iPhone SE 2s. That seems to be the way it works at Apple. And I think actually that's quite good. If that was the case, I know this sounds ridiculous to some people, especially since the XS is the latest phone, but I would ditch that in favour of an iPhone SE 2.
So the likely time frame, if for the people that are holding out for a more affordable, potentially even smaller screen-sized phone, I think the likely time frame is that when iOS 13 public betas come out, which is day of the keynote of WWDC, so next week, people will start to get their hands on those and can dig into the code. And for developers, they need to know whether they're going to be designing for, or which screen sizes they're going to be designing for. And so it's at that point that they discovered, for example, that there's a, 12.9-inch iPad Pro that came out a couple of years ago. You know, they find out all the new screen sizes. So I think that's when we'll find out if indeed there is anything new about a smaller screen size. But, you know, let's not kind of hold our breath. If they are going to announce a more affordable phone, you're right, it won't be at the same time as the, or it won't be launched at the same time as the other phones in September, just like the XR was a month later. So if people wanted to get a phone straight away, then the XS and the XS Max were the only ones available for a month, because I think they didn't want everyone to go for the more affordable option, perhaps. We'll see. But I'm personally hoping for an affordable phone. If it could keep the home button, brill. I'm sure I'd get used to the new one, but I like Touch ID. You can do it under the duvet.
Oh, well, I wouldn't ask. but what I will say is I think that Face ID is a pain in the neck, especially for those of us who, and I always call it the blind look, where our phone is usually up against our ear, and you're kind of doing that thing where it's up against your ear and you're swiping to hear the options, unless, of course, you've got AirPods in, which a lot of people are doing now. But I think, I find that really annoying. Face ID is a pain, because you do have to have your face in front of the phone, and a lot of the time my face isn't. It's usually lying on a table, Bluetooth keyboard attached to it, perhaps an earpiece in. I don't need to look at it. I mean, and that's the problem. So you're constantly having to remind yourself to look at something, even though you don't have to look at it. And even then, sometimes it doesn't work, you know?
So a quick tip for people with a vision impairment who might not look directly at things, or maybe even have eyes that can look directly at things. If you switch off the, I think it's called needs attention.
Yes,
item face ID under attention. Face ID, then it will be ever so slightly less secure, but it does mean that you won't have to look directly at the phone to be able to unlock it. Just point based in the general direction.
You see, I would say that's true, except for the fact that you don't have to give it full attention. Like, you don't have to look at it. That was one of the great things about Face ID, actually, when it launched, that you didn't, with that option, you didn't have to stare, look at the camera as if I'd even know where it was. But with Face ID, you still have to have your head in front of the camera. Now, okay, yep. The trick is, a lot of blind people do this, they put their phone to their nose and they pull it back and then they work it that way. But the problem is with that, and this is the goes back to my thing about accessibility versus usability. If you do that, you might miss the kind of window of opportunity for Face ID to recognise you. And I've had a couple of occasions where it doesn't capture it, and then you've got to go and you've got to ask it to do it again. It doesn't keep trying. It only does it like once, and then it'll say, try again, and you've got to hit the button to then try again and hope you can get everything in place. Can be a bit of a nuisance, especially in a hurry. And then, of course, you get, I think, one or two attempts, and then it asks you for the passcode.
Yeah.
And that just drives me insane. So, no, for that reason, Touch ID is far more preferable for me. And funnily enough, my wife is looking for a new phone at the moment, and she's asking me a lot about this. Which one should I go for? She wanted to go for the iPhone 8, and I said, no, don't do that. Even get the XR. Now I'm thinking, you know what? If a decent iPhone SE 2 came out in the shape of an iPhone 6, I'd be dumping this tomorrow, and I'd be getting that. Yes, I know I'd be compromising on perhaps the camera or maybe the power. I'll be honest, I don't think it'd matter too much. When you turn the screen off, your experience of iOS changes, I think.
Oh, definitely. And I'm sitting here wondering if it's worth having a discussion around, if you've got no vision at all, around 10R versus 8 at this point. Mm-hmm. Depending on how long you keep your phones for, the 8 might stay current long enough, you know, supported with iOS, and, you know, the camera's very, very decent. It's going to be cheaper. The battery life is great. Obviously, on the 10R, it's even greater. But, we could have a discussion at some point about which is the best iPhone for which particular use case, you know, the sort of users, what their needs are. Maybe people would want to write in or do a little audio clip about which iPhone they went for recently,
yeah,
and why. That might be quite a useful feature.
That's a brilliant idea, because, you know, one thing for me is, I kind of knew this when I was getting the iPhone XS, I kind of knew I'm buying something that I don't know if I'll ever use all of the features of. The screen seems almost criminal that I've got a screen like this, that's such a wonderful screen, and I don't really get any benefit out of it. And that's the thing for me. I don't really care about the screen. I'll tell you how much I love my SE, right? I was on eBay the other day, and they were selling them on eBay, refurbished models, for £100. And it was a 128 gig, and I was so tempted just to buy it. But obviously, it's the operating system. You know, that's the problem. So, you know, if they bring out a 6, and I think it will be that form factor, I don't think they'll bring out a new form factor for it. I think it'll be a 6 style, and, you know, or even an 8. I mean, it's, the 8 was essentially the 6 and the 6S. So, you know, maybe an 8 format, whatever. But that style coming out, I think I'd have that. But anyway, that's my wish list, but I don't think that's going to happen. One thing on macOS, though, and this is actually quite important for macOS and the updates that are coming. What we're beginning to see, and I think we'll see this not go all the way at WWDC this year, but I think we're going to start to see the merge of macOS and iOS.
Absolutely.
Because one of the key things that's coming out of this, from what we hear, is how applications, and this, remember, it's a developers conference, so, you know, this is for the geeks and the nerds, but actually what they need to do is develop apps for the Mac platform. They have to develop them for the iPhone, the iPad. They then got to develop it for, you know, Windows and all the rest. Well, that's obviously quite cumbersome, quite time-consuming, costly as well. So with this new plan, they would essentially create one app that would be universal for all platforms, including the Mac, including the iPhone, including the iPad. And that could make things rather interesting. Even from an accessibility point of view, that could be good because it's a unified experience.
Yep.
You know the app on one device, you'll be able to use it on the other. This could be good, I think.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We're going to see a lot more, and a lot of them were leaked. A lot of the names of the apps that are going to be coming over from iOS, Health. I can't remember what the other ones were.
Messages as well. Messages.
Yeah, messages. That's right. Absolutely. So we'll finally get fireworks on macOS.
I remember getting that once, and I thought, what on earth is wrong with my phone?
What's going on with my phone? You're absolutely right. It's going to be easier and easier for developers to create a single app for both platforms. Now, at the moment, they have to recompile for each platform. But they're saying by 2021 that it'll be a single binary that they can submit and that will work across all platforms. And that actually means that by 2021, Macs will be ARM-based as well, because at the moment they're being recompiled for Intel, you know, the processes that are in Macs rather than ARM processes in your phone. So yeah, we're moving that way, and going ARM on macOS has huge benefits. We'll see massive improvements in battery, we'll see cellular enabled laptops by default. Power management is so much better. Sleep mode is so much smarter. So we're going to see a massive development in Macs, mostly portable Macs, going forward in the next couple of years. So watch this space. But yeah, expect loads of really nice, much better iOS apps coming over. The ones that were ported over last year were kind of 1.0 versions of the home app, voice memos, news, etc.
And that's good. That is a good thing. As long as accessibility is followed, I'll be honest, using an iPad as a device, and this is my experience, you may feel differently, dear listener, but my experience has been that as a productivity device, it's not great. The issues I have around, for example, VoiceOver grabbing focus, where it wants to grab focus. So say you're in the middle of a document, you're working away, then the next minute you get a text message. Suddenly your focus jumps to the messages. Now, it does that in the Mac as well, don't get me wrong, but the difference is it will read the message, it won't lose focus. And that's something they need to work on. So on the Mac, I'm working away on a Word document, I'll get a text from Robin saying, you know, where are you? It's time to record. I'm aware of that message, but it doesn't jump focus to it, which means I can continue typing and working away. Whereas on the iPad, it does lose focus. You've then got to find your way back into the document, and you've then got to find your place again. And I'll be honest, I do love the iPad for a lot of things, but I find the kind of productivity side, you know, shopping on Amazon or going to Argos or looking at shops, that's fine. That's actually quite a pleasant experience. But it's when you're trying to do those productivity tasks that I think it lets itself down a little bit in that field. And I think it is the accessibility side. Even mail is quite, you know, you have to kind of learn a whole new way of working just to get round the mail system and kind of learn it as you go. It's not quite as logical as perhaps it should be at this point.
And I don't know if this is an accessibility feature per se, but it is actually going to be turning up under the accessibility settings in iOS, and that is mouse support for iOS. We will get a mouse pointer, guys.
So that's interesting, because I'd read this is classed under accessibility. I don't get that necessarily.
I think that Apple don't want it to be seen as the default. You know, they've resisted adding in trackpad support or mouse support, although I'm not sure how you would, well, a Bluetooth mouse, I suppose. But yeah, a pointing device. They've always wanted it to be touch first. Then came pretty good keyboard support, which, by the way, seems to be significantly updated or augmented in iOS 13. A lot more keystroke alternatives, etc.
Good.
And that's probably driven in large part by Marzipan, you know, the ability to run iOS apps on macOS, which is a very heavily keyboard and mouse driven environment, because of course there aren't any touchscreens on Macs. I think they're grudgingly providing it, but they don't want it to be front and center on iOS.
Yeah, I don't really understand how that's going to work, if I'm honest, but I suppose we're talking here about a new design on iOS 13, so on iPad anyway. Yeah. I'll be honest, if I was being productive using an iOS device, it would be a phone, because I find the phone just easier to navigate. I think partly because with the Mac, for example, say the Mail app, I go back to this, in the Mail app, it's a single column on the iPhone, and you just move between the columns through the back buttons and through the menus. Whereas on an iPad, it lays all those columns out. So you'd have maybe three or possibly four columns. You know, you've got your list of accounts, you've got your list of mailboxes, and then you've got your list of emails, and then you've got the email itself all in different columns, and trying to navigate all of that is cumbersome. So, yeah, I think that's another debate there, Robin. You know, iPhone or iPad for you know, for productivity purposes. And I think, actually, it depends, again, who you are. I mean, we had Robin Spinks on talking about Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and, you know, he's a huge fan of the iPad. He loves it. And I think if you've got low vision, I can totally see why someone would want to go down that route. Whereas someone who is blind, who's using a screen reader, might look at a different device. But that's, of course, the great thing about choice. We've got options.
I think it's definitely horses for courses. I know somebody who's completely blind voiceover user, a hugely passionate iPad user. He's got an iPad Pro, 12.9 inch. He uses all the real estate to the max, as it were. He can get around really well. But I'm at sea with a big screen. So yeah, give me a small screen where I can easily find what I'm looking for.
So WWDC is happening 3rd to the 7th of June. We are not going to be here next week. We are off next week, but we will be giving you a chance to hear the fantastic conversation that you, me and Robin Spinks from RNIB had next week. If you didn't hear it, check it out next Tuesday at 1 on RNIB Connect Radio, Freeview Channel 730, and online. You can listen to our Global Accessibility Awareness Day special. A great opportunity to catch up with what is going on in the world of tech from, you know, from the past to present to future. So that coming up next Tuesday. We will be back, though, the following week, as always, on air and on podcast. We will be talking about WWDC, what actually came out, whether or not I'm buying a new iPhone SE 2, who knows what else. But that's coming up here on Tech Talk, a little programming note there. Let's talk about Windows, though, because I finally updated my Windows to Spring Edition 1903, which is the Spring Edition of this year's Microsoft Windows 10. And in there, lots of accessibility features. The main one being ease of access settings has kind of brought together a whole pile of accessibility functions. What they've tried to do, I think, is simplify the whole experience with Windows 10. And now when you search for ease of access, you get access to all of the services. If you're blind, if you have hearing problems, if you are having motor dexterity issues, if you need to use a pointer, whatever kind of device you need or whatever way of working you need, you'll find it now under ease of access. Now, of course, this is a show for blind people, so we're going to talk about the blind stuff that's in there. I've had a look around. I'll be honest with you. One of the issues I've had for many years with Windows is text size. And when my site was a lot better, I used to read, even then, I would struggle to navigate Windows, you know, with, you know, without having my nose pressed against the screen, trying to see the start menu and, you know, where everything was. But now they've actually created a feature. For me, it's about 3 years too late, but for everyone else, this is fantastic. It's called the Make Everything Bigger feature, which I love. I love that naming type as well. Just make everything bigger. And there's two sides to this. You can make the text bigger, and that applies across the operating system. So your text size goes up considerably, I think up to about 24, maybe even 36 point, which is big. But you can also make the display bigger to combat that as well. So, not, you know, it's one thing making the text bigger, but of course then all the boxes remain the same size, so everything feels all crumpled up, and you often get text running off the screen. Whereas you can actually make the entire display bigger as well.
So do you press a button and your monitor enlarges on your desk?
Yeah, that's right. You press a special button, your monitor expands to 100 inches.
Like a creaking noise.
That's the one thing that actually is a slight problem with it. I tried it. I've got a 27-inch monitor at home. When I really need to use the screen, I have this monitor. I don't use it often, but when I do, I find it really good. And with this feature, yes, it's brilliant. It does make the text a lot bigger. But even on a 27-inch monitor, it's still hard to fit anything onto the screen. You suddenly your internet box, your internet browser is just, you know, tiny on the screen. So it is good. It's brilliant if you'd want to be able to, if you for example don't like using a magnifier or you don't like using JAWS. I know people like me who've got conditions like mine, which is a nystagmus, means that, you know, the idea of something moving around on the screen all the time is just horrific. You want it to be static, but you want it to be large enough to see, and this low vision feature certainly makes that possible.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, I'm looking forward to, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago about VR, where if you've got a vision impairment but some useful vision, then you've got a headset on, hopefully not as bulky as the HoloLens, and in front of you you've got, in effect, a, I don't know, 85-inch screen, and you want to look at something, you can just sort of slightly scrunch your face up to zoom in, slightly raise your eyebrows to zoom out on anything that you want to look at, and it'll be super slick, super quick, and, you know, very intuitive, and you would just be looking, you know, using your eyes to roam around, which, by the way, has been augmented significantly in Windows 10 eye gaze or eye tracking control. So yes. Yeah, there's lots of nice features built into Windows 10, none of which, sorry, the 1903 update, none of which I can use because it's not updating on mine. I get a weird error message when I look on the internet. It says, you've got another update that's failed to finish or something. Another one still in progress. So I'm sad. Don't know
well,
what to do.
Well, I cheated a little bit. Because you can actually, if you just search for it, how to download the spring update, you can get a link that will actually take you directly to a Microsoft update page online, and you can update directly from there. That's what I did.
I did that, but it in effect does the same thing. So I'm going to have to blat the whole operating system, I think.
Oh, just buy a new computer, be done with it. That's terrible. but no, this is good. And Narrator, I want to talk about that. I know Narrator, the joke we always come up with Narrator is, it's the screen reader that gets you to other screen readers. I think that may have changed in this recent update. I mean, last update gave us a lot of new functionality. This latest one, I think, cements all that. In particular, and I won't go through all the features because there are lots of them, but I think the key things are the key mapping. So when you go to a website, for example, if you use JAWS or NVDA, you're probably used to using H for headings and B for buttons and, you know, all that kind of thing to move around, insert F7 to get all your links up on screen so you can look at them. Well, all of that has been standardized across Narrator now. So you can use it if you've been used to using NVDA, and NVDA maybe isn't working on a website for you or it's not doing the job, you can turn Narrator on and use exactly the same commands. And I think this kind of standardization is a really smart move.
Absolutely.
So I'm quite excited about that. That's one thing. Lots of Braille support as well. And I'm kind of jumping around the features here. There are a lot of them, but Braille is one major one that Narrator was criticized for a lot in the past. But they've now announced support for the Orbit Reader 20, and that is on their release notes, which is good. And another one that I wanted to mention was the web browser. Now, Microsoft Edge is a browser that I don't tend to go near. It's a little bit historical because, you know, when Windows 10 came out initially, JAWS didn't work with Microsoft Edge, so I just never used it. But they have announced that because Narrator has had huge amounts of input and now works brilliantly with Edge, they've added support for NVDA and JAWS support for Edge as well. So, yeah, that's good. That's a good... We're in a good place with that. Although the problem is a lot of us are probably using Chrome.
Well, funny you should say that, because I think quite importantly, what you're now surfing on is what's unofficially known as Credge, which is Edge with a Chromium engine. So in that update came the new version of Edge, which has the Chromium. So it's basically Chrome that you're surfing in there, but just, you know, with a Microsoft skin on top and the Microsoft extension store and app store instead of anything Google. So I think that was a very smart move, because you're absolutely right. Even when JAWS support, for example, or screen reader support in general, was added into Edge very belatedly, it wasn't quite there. 9 out of 10 keystrokes would work, and then you'd get like a kind of moment as you did something and it didn't work. And obviously the UI was all very different. So yeah, it was disconcerting even in its recent version. So I will try that because it's supposed to have a performance benefit. One thing about Chrome is that it's very processor heavy, very memory intensive. And if you've got any number of extensions built in, then it can slow your machine down quite a lot. So this one's supposed to be slimmer and have a lighter footprint. So if I ever get it on, I'll report back as to my feelings on Credge.
Yeah, Credge indeed. And that's also coming to Mac, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because now they've gone Chrome, they can easily port it to other places where it's supported. So yeah, it's going to be there. It's on iOS now or coming up. I can't remember. Edge, if you have a look in the store, then it'll be on Android, it'll be running the Chromium engine, but on iOS, it'll still be running Safari because that's the only web rendering engine that's allowed on iOS for security reasons, but it'll look and feel similar and all your bookmarks. And if you, you know, log in with your Microsoft account, it will feel like a very similar experience.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, I've often done that where I'll use one browser for my own stuff and I'll use one for work because then it kind of separates things out, separates out the bookmarks and all of that. You don't want all of that in your own personal browser. There's nothing more depressing than, you know, reading about all your work bookmarks when you're sitting at home enjoying yourself, especially on a bank holiday weekend. So yeah, that is the kind of, that's the main stuff that's come out of the 1903. There are lots more features in there, but I have to say those are the kind of top ones for me, and I think it's really exciting to see how Microsoft have properly embraced accessibility and are continuing to. So I think if you're going out to buy a computer, you've got low vision, you may be thinking it's time to really consider trying out a screen reader. Well, there's one built into Microsoft, well worth a try. So there you go. Anyway, let's move on because Andy's been patiently waiting. He's here with the emails. Are you all right over there, Andy?
I'm still here. Hello.
Excellent. Yes, he's been here. He's been here the whole show.
I am working here.
Are you?
Yeah, kind of.
That was a first for everything. right, let's get to the emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of emails once again, and Andy is here to read them for us. So, Andy, what's our first one?
So the first one is from Pete. He says, "Hi all, I listened to your latest podcast yesterday, during which Robin tried to use JAWS for OCR. I thought some listeners might find the following useful. I use Supernova Screen Reader for work, which incorporates some quite powerful OCR. It can scan from file, scanner, or using its Connect and View function, also from a camera. I believe it scans JPEG, but I normally use PDF, and I've never had a major problem. As an additional benefit, you can have the OCR output sent to its own reader or to Word, so you can edit as well as read. Supernova also allows OCR from clipboard, so you can use the normal Windows shortcut of Alt Print Screen to capture screen, or any other method of cutting information to the clipboard, and then have it OCR'd and read. Something else I use where the inaccessible document is fairly long, or if Supernova doesn't support the file type is for import, is to use Windows 10 Print to PDF. This will create a PDF, and then you can run it through OCR. I use NVDA at home, but I don't know how to use OCR on that, so any tips on that would be appreciated. With regards to scanning books, I have tried this at home without much success using my scanner and various iPad OCR options, but I am planning to try to use the auto capture function in the Voice Dream scanner with the phone held against with a gooseneck holder. This did not work with anything which needed you to tap the screen to take a photo because the phone moved. So hopefully the auto capture works. The phone shouldn't be able to wobble about and might get a better result. I'll let you know if this works. I've also tried this with my Prodigy Connect 12, but the results for OCR generally have been fairly disappointing using its camera, but fairly good if you can import. It didn't manage much of a result with the book scanned in PDF format, though. Keep up the good work. That's from Pete.
Supernova. There's a program I haven't used since I was at school. and, you know, one of the things about Supernova is that it is actually pretty good. I think it was one of those things when you were growing up, you kind of fell into one camp or the other. and access to work made the decision for me that I would end up with Zoom text. I think I'd have rather had Supernova, if I'm honest. But
Supernova and all of the Dolphin stable of products are really good, yeah, and very common in education because of their affordability.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of people have those as their starting point, and you know, would use them through into the corporate world, definitely.
Goes back to that thing we were talking about before, though, about OCR. You know, it is what works. I mean, I mentioned I use Kurzweil 1000. I'm currently scanning my book. Oh, by the way, I got a new scanner, which I'm very excited about. I got a new scanner for just for this purpose.
I'm hoping this is going to be one expensive book, a grand focus.
It's cost about 1,200 quid just to read a book that I got for nothing at a library. But yeah, this is a scanner. It's the Plustech Optic Book. 3,900, if you're counting. That's not the price, by the way. But it is a brilliant scanner. And what it is, it's a book edge scanner. So you can push a book onto it right up to the edge of the spine. It will capture with no shadows. These are ones that apparently librarians use. They are very common in libraries. And for those who, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? The capture and archive. That's what I'm looking for. Books, yeah. So
it's like the Reading Edge that people might remember.
Yes, that's right. And it's a really good piece of kit. It cost me about £185. So it's, you know, it's not cheap, but it's not as much as I thought it was going to cost me, if I'm honest, when I first tried it out. It's a really good scanner, though. Although I will warn you, if you ever buy one, don't touch any of the buttons on it. Don't touch any buttons on it. There's buttons on the side. Don't press them, because otherwise your life will just be spent wondering what you've done, and it takes ages to kind of reverse out of that particular cul-de-sac.
Go into German mode or something.
That's
like that.
The kind of thing. I may as well have done that. Yeah, I don't know what it was trying to get me to do.
I think you're going to have to start a side business now because you've got all the kit. You're
that's
gonna
it. Yeah,
books
scanned.
Scanned on demand.
Stevie scans. new business.
Speedy scan.
So yeah, I got that, and I think it's brilliant. But VoiceStream Scanner is very interesting. With this batch mode feature, that should help, especially like you were saying there. It is going to make such a difference if you can auto-capture a whole pile of books. So we'll just need to see how that goes. And as for the Prodigy Connect 12, I'm not going to comment too much on that. I've got a Prodigy 20 that I got a good few years back now. And yeah, moving on. I'm going to say
so about NVDA. He mentioned there.
Yeah, not one I know about, if I'm honest.
So yeah, it uses the Windows 10 scanning engine, and it absolutely can do the things that we tried to cover last time with JAWS. So NVDA key, which can be defined as a number of things, but in the documentation it's just called the NVDA key. You will know which one you've set it as. Plus R is the keystroke, and then it will take whatever is in focus, and it can do all of the things that I mentioned last week with JAWS, and it brings it into a kind of a virtual window. It's called browse mode, and then you can just review it at will, and you can click on things as well. So it's really, really powerful. Give it a go. NVDA is super sophisticated these days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's got all the features in it. Okay, another email.
So this next one's from Derek. He says, hi to the Tech Talk team. I could do with a bit of help/advice. I'm a guide dog.
And you came to us?
Yeah.
Wow.
He says, I'm a guide dog owner, and I'm looking into purchasing an action camera to put on the harness. I'm thinking of one that I can control with my iPhone. He says, I find your show very informative, instructional, and very, very entertaining. Many thanks. That's from Derek.
And that was for our show?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he does say Tech Talk team.
Wow, okay.
I think you might have been sitting on this one for a while. They must be talking about the other guys.
Well, I don't know about you. I have an answer to this. Because I have just been mucking around with a GoPro. Mm-hmm. Now, the one I've got is the GoPro Hero 7. It's not the cheapest of action cameras. I think it was £380, so considered purchase. But there are other options. I think there's ones that start about £150, £170.
I'm looking at the Hero 5, and that's £249. I couldn't see anything cheaper that had smartphone connectivity, but go ahead.
Well, I think smartphone connectivity is one thing, but one thing that does And I don't know which one has it. I know there are three in the range. There's, I think, is it white, silver, black or something? There's a whole wide range of colours. The one I've got is the Hero 7 Black, which is 380. And one feature it has, and I think some of the other ones have as well, is voice activation.
Yeah.
That's actually the key thing. You might need some sighted help to set it up, and I hate when I say that because I know myself how horrible that sounds. But then you could use Be My Eyes, you know, and set it up. I don't even know where to start with it in that respect because it was set up for me. But once it's set up, you just say GoPro record, GoPro stop record. You know, you give it commands, and that could be really useful because then all you have to do is turn it on. It does give you beeps, so it'll give you, I think, a single beep when it starts recording, and then it kind of triple beeps at the end once you say stop. So, you know, you kind of get audible feedback that it's doing what you asked it to do. So I think that might be an option. I mean, it depends on how much money you're wanting to spend, but I'll be honest, some of the cheaper ones won't give you much in terms of accessibility.
Yeah, so the Hero 5 Black has that voice activation as well.
Oh, there you go.
That's $249.99. The one that if you basically just want to record things when you're out and about onto a little SD card, and you can then swap out the SD card for a blank one each time you go out, perhaps. And, you know, if something happened on that journey, I was wondering what he actually wanted it for. If there's, you know, a particular thing where he wants to turn it on there and then and just capture that 2 minutes of video, whatever it is, then the GoPro ones are definitely the ones to go for. But if it's for general purpose use, each time you go out for a walk, for example, then something like this Ape Man Sports action camera is only £30, and it has 20 mounting options. So I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find something that would clip to the harness, for example. 170 degree viewing angle, so you'll get a really nice wide field of view. And the battery lasts for 120 minutes. And, you know, just keep on popping a fresh or just swap between two SD cards, for example. And each time you come home and, you know, that you don't want to keep the video of that particular outing, then you would just delete that one and pop it back in or pop the other one in, you know. So whatever you want to do, but that's £30. So that's not smartphone enabled. That's where you go into the kind of big bucks territory.
But that might be easier, though. I mean,
yeah,
they generally just have a start and stop button, don't they? I mean, at that level, you've
absolutely
got a huge amount of buttons on it.
Yeah, yeah. You would just press it, head out. If something happens, you've got the video.
That might work, actually. Okay, well, I'd be interested to hear what you got to say on that one, Derek. Thank you for that. Okay, let's go to another email. This one is from Kelly. Now, Kelly's been emailing us in quite a lot, so we haven't gotten to all of Kelly's emails, but I did want to pick up on this one this week, Andy.
So it's time for another email from Kelly. She says, "Hi, gang. I tried the Lazarillo app, and I think it's very impressive. I heard about this app last Tuesday on the Talking Tech podcast with David Woodbridge and Stephen Jolly, and they both raved about it. I didn't want to go to the App Store just in case it wasn't available in the UK, but after hearing about it with you, Robin, I thought, well, I would download it and give it a go. And what I like about this app is that you can use it on any transport. I tried it in my friend's car and going to my local pub. It's so responsive, and the description of where you are is amazing, with a capital A. I can honestly say that it is 100% accurate. It reminds me very much of the old Trekker Breeze app in a way. You can look at places of interest. You can search for a destination and put it as one of your favourites. Or you can just go to a category such as pubs, and then you can find out where you want to go. It gives you so much information, and I just love this app. However, it doesn't tell you if there are obstacles or when to cross a busy road. That relies on your mobility. The most important thing to mention is that it doesn't replace a guide dog or a long cane. You still need to use them. What it does do is it gives you back independence. To end my email, I thought that Robin would like to know my favourite game to play with Lady A. It's called Yes, Sire. It asks you a series of questions, and if you don't get it right, you're going to get executed by the king. That's all for now. That's Kelly in Loxford in West Sussex again.
Thank you, Kelly. Yeah. Everyone loves the Echo, don't they?
Well, Yes Sire is a brilliant game. It's by a company called Voxelerate, and we actually covered Yes Sire back in episode 150. I've just looked it up, and we've covered loads of other ones by Voxelerate as well. So yeah, plug for Dot to Dot there. Thanks.
So Lazarillo mentioned there. Can I just mention another couple of things that I found? Because one of the issues for me has been trying to get up-to-date bus information. Now, I live in a small town, a small village, really, and you know there's not a lot. I mean, there's one bus. Now, you'd think I could memorise the bus timetable, but the problem is that it changes nearly every 5 minutes. They keep changing it, or you know they take the service down a notch or whatever. So trying to remember and find the bus information is quite awkward. Now, I found a skill for Lady A called Bus Info. You'll know about this. I'm sure you've done one on it already.
We have.
And Bus Info is brilliant because all I do is I go to, now, if I'm right in saying, I have to go to findmystop.co.uk first. I have to find the bus stop. Now, you might think that's a bit complicated. It actually isn't. If you just have a rough idea where your nearest stop is, put that road in, and it will give you a list of options. You will then know, based on your local area and where you live, where that stop is. So mine's is a kind of a junction of two roads, which often that's how they show up. So it's like, you know, main road and side street name. And I got the number, and I memorised it, and I actually have still memorised it. I can tell you, if you really want to know what my bus stop number is, I'm not going to, but you know, because that would be particularly sad. But yeah, I memorised the 7 or 8, I think it was 8-digit number, or 7, I think it might be. And once it's in there, in your mind, you ask Lady A to enable bus info. She will ask you for that number. Once you've given it to it, it will then tell you the next two buses to leave from that stop. And it will remember that forever. So, personally, I think this is fantastic. You can add more bus stops, other places if you wanted. As long as you know the bus stop, you can have as many as you want, I think. But, you know, for me, it's just simple. Just two bus stops, one going, one coming back. And
absolutely,
it's really good.
We covered it episode 5, guys, just looked it up. It's called Bus Stop Info according to this, so I don't know if it's a slightly different skill. There are over 30,000 skills there now, but yeah, that's absolutely as you describe. It sounds a bit involved, and it kind of is, in setting up your buses, bus stops, but then you just don't have to worry about that ever again. You just say open bus stop info, and it will give you those timings and live as well. So if the bus is late, then it's reflected there. So yeah, it's
that's
really
right.
Good.
No, it's really good. In fact, you know, none of our bus stops have any information on them at all. So this is perfect. And, you know, having Lady A on the move would be brilliant here as well. I mean, you do have Lady A on the move, I suppose, but through your phone. But anyway, that's
and there are apps as well, obviously, for bus info.
Yes, that's right. Although I find them all a bit cumbersome, to be honest. I just prefer to ask Lady A. So, you know, I think what I like about that is you do the work at the start, and then it's always available to you. The other one I want to mention, which is kind of Scotland only, I'm afraid, this kind of came to me by accident. I was talking to my local bus company about a new bus service that launched at the weekend, and I wanted to know what time the bus was and where it was leaving from and all the rest. So I contacted the bus company, and one of the things they told me about was a new app from Travelline in Scotland. Now, Travelline is UK. Many of us probably use it to call up and ask, you know, where our nearest service is, maybe bus or train or ferry or whatever. But in Scotland, they've actually developed, and I didn't know this, but they've developed an app for Scottish travellers who are blind, who want to use the buses and not only find their bus stop, which is one thing it does, it'll help you locate the bus stop, even walk you to it. It will also help you find the bus, the next bus from that stop, and once you're on the bus, track the journey. Now, this is called Scott Talk, S-C-O-T, Talk, T-A-L-K, two words. It's only available in Scotland, though, so I don't know if it's been replicated elsewhere. I don't know yet. Maybe there is another one for Travelline in other parts of the country. But at the moment, if you're in Scotland listening to this and you want to try it, it's called Scott Talk. And I've used it. I tried it at the weekend. It works. It's really good. And knowing where you are on the bus at any given time does make a difference. So I really like it.
And a shout out to Kelly and the Lazarillo thing there, because it seems like that does a lot of that as well.
Yes, exactly.
For the rest of us.
For those of you not in Scotland, there are options. Right, listen, I think we might have time for a very quick email. Just a minute or two left, Andy. We've got a quick email there.
Yeah, this one's from Julian. I'll speed through this one. He says, a couple of weeks ago, I recommended a text recognition app called Speak by High Mountain. Since then, there has been an update. The feel option that I didn't understand has been deleted. The developer says this was not being used, but perhaps she or he listens to Tech Talk, as all right-thinking people should. Mm-hmm. The interface has also been simplified and improved. I now think that this is a brilliant app, especially as it is free. Even the colour detector is reasonably accurate, although it still seems to get colour names from a poetic paint chart.
Lovely.
I think that I am publicly slightly half-hearted about an app, but then it is improved, only to be fair that I acknowledge the fact. By the way, I am well aware that Stephen and Sean are attempting to follow up on the Beatles and conquer the new world. So I know that Sean has finally seen the light and embraced the way of the androids.
Yeah, he was talking about this on Double Tap the other week, and he's gone on and on and on about this Android phone. He's so excited about getting the Google Pixel 3. I don't think it'll last, if I'm honest, but we shall see.
He says, if he is ever enticed into doing a review of Android text scanning apps on either side of the Atlantic, make sure that he tries this one. It's a keeper, says Julian.
Well, there you go. So many options now, it seems, and even for Android as well, Robin, which is brilliant.
Yeah, and huge plug for Double Tap Canada this week. I nearly fell off my chair listening to Sean trying to find a fork with his feet. You got to listen to it, guys.
Yeah, that was rather amusing. Well, listen, thank you so much, Robin, for being with us. We're off next week, but we are back for our look at what's been coming out from WWDC, the rumours, what will come true. Will we get a new iPhone? Highly doubt it. Anyway, we will be here with all of the answers to that. Plus, we'll be keeping an eye on all of the other tech news. Keep your emails coming in as well. Don't miss us too much. We'll be back soon. A couple of weeks' time. Next week, though, if you have missed our Global Accessibility Awareness Day special, then don't worry. You can check it out on our next episode, which goes out Tuesday, 1 o'clock on RNIB Connect Radio. Andy, thank you for coming in.
Cheers. I'll see you next time.
See you next time. Robin, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, everyone.
Keep those emails coming to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. See you next time.